We will call a meeting to order, the Pension Commission meeting for Friday the 13th, 2011. We have a quorum, and would someone move the minutes from our last meeting?
So moved.
Representative Kahn moved the minutes. Are there any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The minutes are approved. We will have Mr. Martin walk through the mini omnibus bill and take questions from commission members, and then we will give an opportunity to anyone in the audience who wishes to speak to any provision within that bill. Our intent is to move a bill out today, and in the House, the bill has to go both to government operations and state government finance. I've given the alert to both committees that once a bill comes out of here, that they would need to plan to get some hearings set up for next week. So that's underway, and I don't know on the Senate side what the process there is. Senator DeDaley?
I would imagine it goes to state government, innovation, and veterans.
Okay. So with that, Mr. Martin, will you walk us through?
Members, in your packets, you have two items that relate to the 2011 omnibus retirement bill. One is a five-page memo covering the bill from me. The other is the actual document that we'll be working from. It's the potential 2011 omnibus bill in the form of a delete everything after the enacting clause amendment. This contains the 11 bills that you have reviewed but have not acted upon thus far, and they're broken into five articles by the retirement plan or substance area that are covered by the particular piece of legislation is how they're grouped. The first article has to do with the PERA-related changes that have been considered by the Pension Commission. There are two bills that are included in this part of the bill. House File 476, Kelly, Senate File 176, Howe, and House File 1668, Murphy M. The first three sections of Article 1 are from the Kelly-Howe bill, have to do with Red Wing, the Port Authority in Red Wing, where they have been considered to be members without statutory authorization, members of PERA General Employees Retirement Plan. This retains, as PERA members, all existing employees of the Red Wing Port Authority and validates the prior employee and employer contributions that were made to the current Red Wing Authority employees. The fourth section of the bill, of this article, which starts on the bottom of page 4 of document H1647-5A, this relates to Duluth and the Duluth Airports, the Duluth Airport Authority. Because of various intervening appeals, a prior special law 2 years ago was not approved by either entity before the January 1, 2011 deadline. So this represents a reenactment of the special law authority that was first passed first recommended by the 2009 Pension Commission. And it gives the two employing units a second option in how to handle some instances where contributions were made on items that were not validly considered salary for PERA purposes and led to overpayments of some benefits, and trying to unwind that mistake, which in some cases could date back 10 or more years. This provides requested authority by those two employing entities to handle that resolution of over contributions and over recognition of some compensation non salary items. So that's Article 1. Article 2 relates to teacher retirement coverage. This contains three different bills. The Duluth Teachers Bill, the bill recommended by the Duluth Teacher Pension Fund, a bill recommended by the St. Paul Teacher Retirement Fund, and then provisions related to coverage for employees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system, which involves, as an alternative, defined benefit contribution by either TRA or one of the first-class city teacher plans instead of the MNSCU IRAP individual retirement account plan. Because they're organized by statutory number, bounce around a bit. Several of the first 10 sections relate to the Duluth Teachers Plan, and the change here is really a shift for new hires from a three-year service requirement for vesting to a five-year service requirement for vesting. Duluth made this change in 2010, recommended it to the Pension Commission, and the Commission accepted it in 2010 for the normal retirement benefit in Duluth, but failed to make all the conforming changes. So this makes a clear, clean sweep change to five-year vesting for new hires in Duluth. In the case of St. Paul teachers, which is the middle chunk largely of the bill, this has to do with several items that were done by other retirement plans during the 2010 omnibus pension bill, a change in their post-retirement adjustment mechanism, a reduction in the interest rate on refunds, a change in the deferred annuity augmentation rate, and the elimination for St. Paul teachers of the interest on reemployed annuity earnings limitation deferrals. These all would be benefit changes that would positively affect the funding status of this pension fund and would be reductions or at least potentially adverse changes in the benefit plan with respect to members' benefits. And they all have some precedent in changes made in 2010 by some other plan. With the MNSCU provisions, which tend to be sections 12 and most of the balance of this article, this has to do with the default for individuals who are newly employed by MNSCU and have prior defined benefit plan coverage. And it also has to do with the question of when benefit counseling is provided to MNSCU employees about their pension coverage. It's an attempt to resolve issues that have popped up on a few occasions in recent years where individuals, because they failed to take action within the 1 year that they have to make a choice by virtue of the default provision, end up in the wrong pension fund from their perspective and seek legislative authority to get a second chance election to then be in the correct pension plan. So most of these provisions, where they're not just cleanup provisions of existing statute, are implementing this shift in the default and requiring more counseling earlier by MNSCU. Article 3 has to do with actuarial assumptions. Here it's a question of two different assumptions, the salary increase assumption. This is used by the actuary to project future salaries on which then future benefit payments would be calculated, and then present value computations made, and then also payroll growth. We use the practice for most of our pension plans of amortizing our unfunded pension liabilities as a level percentage of an increasing payroll, and the payroll growth actuarial assumption is the assumption that the actuary uses to determine how fast that payroll will be increasing, and then calculates the amortization requirement on that basis. The commission looked at and approved changes in these two assumptions back in August of 2010 for the 2010 actuarial valuations. The old set of assumptions for MSRS, General, TRA, and PERA General are still in statute. We're still in statute, and this bill makes those changes to the new assumptions that were approved by the Pension Commission, and then it also changes the salary increase and payroll growth actuarial assumptions for the PERA Police and Fire Plan, consistent with the actuarial experience study that was filed with the Pension Commission in the late fall. So that's the changes in Article 3. Article 4 has to do with volunteer fire plans. It has the contents of two bills. One is the bill for essentially Hibbing. This is the bill that would provide an extended deadline date for receipt of 2010 fire state aid based on a late filing of the volunteer fire financial report with the state auditor's shop. If there are three municipalities that potentially could have taken advantage of this provision, Hibbing and Mackinac up in St. Louis County and Mapleview in Maurer County, as the authors testified, only Hibbing actually has its financial work now filed with the state auditor and would be the only plan that would actually take advantage of this provision. The second section has to do with the White Bear Lake Volunteer Fire Plan and validates some interim actuarial work used in calculating their financial requirements and the minimum municipal contribution to the plan, hence retains their ability to receive fire state aid and not to have to make what turns out to be an unnecessary extra municipal contribution to that retirement plan. So that's Article 4. Article 5 has three different bills in. They relate to one person or small group retirement issues. Here it's a Rukavina bill, a bill by Representative Smith and Senator Jen Olson, and a bill by Representative Morrow and Senator Sharon. The first one, it's three sections long. The first section is a service credit purchase at full actuarial value for an individual who is a current full-time Babbitt police officer who has prior part-time uncovered service in Buell and in Babbitt. And it's, again, a full actuarial value with the city obligated to pay the amount beyond the member equivalent kind of contribution and interest. The second article, or second section of this article, is the Smith-Olson bill. This has to do with a teacher in Hopkins who, in the middle of an extended period of part-time teaching, where she would normally have received full service credit and full salary credit because the school district neglected to file the necessary documentation with TRA, this person did not receive full salary credit in what will turn out to be this person's highest five-year average salary. This permits a purchase of that extra salary credit. This is someone who worked 80% of full-time and wants 100% of full-time equivalent salary credited for her pension purposes. And this requires a full actuarial value purchase with Hopkins paying the balance of the amount due under statute beyond the member contribution plus interest. And the last section is the Morrow-Sharon bill. This is an additional survivor benefit for an individual who died during while doing employment duties fighting the recent Minnesota River flood. The provision provides for a benefit to the surviving spouse of this transportation employee after workers' compensation benefits conclude, something akin to something like 20 years hence. The benefit will be 34% of the person's final average salary, and the benefit is funded by a lump sum payment by MnDOT. Members, that's what's in the potential omnibus retirement bill if you choose to approve the various sections.
Questions from commission members? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard relative to any section of this proposed bill? Yes, please come forward. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. I'm Kim Crockett, President and General Counsel of the Minnesota Free Market Institute. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. I'll try to keep my remarks brief. House File 1528, Senate File 1277, but also the two other bills that Mr. Martin just mentioned, Representative Rucavina's involving the part-time employees in Babbitt and Buell, and also Senator Olson's bill for the part-time employee in Hopkins, I think all fall under a category that I'm concerned may violate an express provision in the Minnesota Constitution. It's Article 12, Section 1, which I will read in part, that the legislature shall pass no special law granting to any individual an exclusive privilege, immunity, or franchise whatsoever. And I'm not testifying as to any legal conclusion today, but just want to point out this provision of our Constitution and a House research memo dated updated July of 2008. And I did email these documents to the staff today, but the email was missed. I think my memo has been in your packet the last two meetings, and the research memos will be with the LCPR staff. We can get them to you. The July of 2008 memo points to the distinction between special and general legislation and the Minnesota Constitution, and it gives us an opportunity to pause and consider whether these types of bills, and I think especially House File 1528, Senate File 1277, with the tragic situation with the MnDOT worker, leads us to ask whether this approach to deal with individual cases is good law or good public policy. And I believe Representative Kahn did pause Wednesday night to worry over this, and I share her concerns. This constitutional prohibition against special legislation makes sense because of the potential for mischief, but also poor planning. If MnDOT, for example, has not provided for employees who are harmed during state emergencies, then maybe it ought to do so. But it should be a general public policy that is adopted after the benefit of public debate, you know, the back and forth of your wisdom as a legislature, rather than these individual ad hoc bills. I'm not sure what Social Security and workers' comp provides for this family who has lost their father and husband. I don't know the particulars of this case, but my point in being here today and my concern is that I'm not sure that this bill or the also the Rukavina and Olson bills are permitted under the state constitution. And I know that this has been going on for decades, and I appreciate your position as legislators, but again, my point in appearing before you is to ask you to pause and consider whether you actually have the authority to act on these. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Crockett. Let me ask you a question. We've got situations where an individual, someone who's benefiting under one of the pension funds, becomes a victim of a city, a county, an employer not doing what they should do, and they have fallen victim to this. Are you saying that kind of
situation? You mean like a notice or contributions or those sorts of things? Is that what you mean?
Well, we've got a couple of situations here where to no fault of the employee at all, they've been victim to a lack of proper procedure being followed by the employer. They didn't get the notice, or something happened where they didn't get recorded correctly in terms of their work situation. I mean, in those situations, it obviously benefits an individual, but are you saying that?
Mr. Chair, I think given that in those situations, I think eligibility probably is not in doubt. That strikes me as something that's a different animal from creating eligibility through legislation for a benefit that you otherwise wouldn't get as a public employee. I think those two are distinct. Though I must admit, as legislators, you're so busy. Do you really want to be the ones that this comes to? Is there some other process? And then maybe that's a conversation for another day. But no, I agree that there are situations where people are eligible for a benefit that they ought to get. And if you have to do the housekeeping work to do it, you know, so be it. But I think where someone is not eligible to deal with it in this way, may not be good public policy, and you may not have the authority to do it, even if no one's ever challenged it.
Thank you for that clarification. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Crockett, as long as I have you here, you posted a comment online that indicated that a bill I sponsored was to benefit a long-term Secretary of the Senate, Mr. Flavin. And I just want you to know that that's not true. That legislation has nothing to do with Mr. Flavin. So whoever gave you that information is wrong.
Well, it benefits.
Ms. Crockett?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, you may respond.
I apologize if we were incorrect in that. I was given information that I thought was pretty solid. And even it doesn't matter who it is. I guess the point is if someone is not eligible for benefits under the law, what I'm saying to you today is that I'm not sure that you have the authority under the Minnesota Constitution to create that eligibility retroactively, whoever it may be.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, my comment is simply that that you're inaccurate in saying that Mr. Flavin would benefit from this legislation. It has nothing to do with Mr. Flavin.
And I would be happy to correct that public record.
Thank you, Ms. Crockett.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Others who wish to be heard? Seeing that no one else wishes to be heard, what is the pleasure of the...
Need a motion of some sort?
We would need a motion, yes, to act on the bill.
In the form of the motion would be to make the 1647-5A, the omnibus retirement bill for the session?
Yes, and to
pass it.
Recommend that it be submitted to both bodies for consideration.
I would so move.
Discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. we then will be forwarding the bill to the House and the Senate to process through their committees, and committees will need to consider it next week and be put on the House and Senate floor subsequent to that in order to be considered. Any other business to come before us today? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I think it's kind of a historical moment in recent omnibus pension history in that it's only 31 pages.
That many?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Murphy, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Very good.
Historically.
Pretty slim.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, I think it reflects the amount of time we had to do this. And everyone needs to understand that, I mean, we haven't even been organized yet for 2 weeks. And so obviously there are a whole host of issues out there that we as a commission are going to need to address going forward, but we just did not have time to do that here. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I just, for kind of public information purposes, I think members of the commission are aware that the Senators Dibble and Dabney have a voluntary consolidation bill for Minneapolis Police and Fire. Minneapolis Police and Fire, or Minneapolis Police, are literally meeting with Minneapolis City at this moment, 2 o'clock they were meeting, to try to see. They apparently are getting fairly close to an agreement that they would like the legislature to consider this year, and I know it's very late, and I have no idea if that meeting's going to consummate in an agreement between the city and the fund. So all I wanted to do was pass out the LCPR 1110A redraft, potentially, of the Dibble-Dabney bill. That all I did was I asked the pension staff to look at the Dibble-Dabney bill. Are there some loose ends that probably would need to be considered if we actually did do something like this year? And that's what the staff did. And so he's Mr. Martin has kind of cleaned it up a little bit. And so this is totally just for public information purposes. There's no agreement at this moment as we sit here, but they do appear to be getting very close. And so I just wanted to pass that out for public information purposes. And this is a, even the two authors, I've just handed them the draft. So this is just a redraft of their original bill that if something actually does move forward and if the decision by the chair and the leadership and the governor is to possibly consider this, this is starting to get to kind of the form it might be in. And all those are a lot of ifs.
Well, thank you for informing us of that, Senator Pogemiller. Members, again, I would like to ask you to, we'll be asking to get some dates from you for possible meetings, late September, late October, and I think maybe if we can get at least a couple of dates set this fall so that we can have commission meetings for the better part of a day. And so we'll be sending around a communication and asking you to indicate if there are some dates that might work for you during that time frame. Any other business to come before the commission at this time? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the abbreviated time that we had in dealing with some of these issues, and I would concur in that sense that correcting clerical errors, and I know that we have a great big agenda coming up for us. I look forward to that kind of good, broad discussion that we really, really must have as a pension commission and moving forward. This feels uncomfortable to be dealing with matters like this on such a short time frame. But in particular, even to this particular bill, I think my tolerance for dealing with some of these things on a very short time frame is about consumed, and that would much prefer these being dealt with over the interim so that we really can get a thorough understanding.
Sure.
Versus just acting, especially in only a week left.
Yep. Point well taken. No other business before the commission? We're adjourned.
Something I should mention, thank you for your work on the State Department appropriation, a 5% reduction.
Help you out.
We'll